The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. It is the 9 o'clock hour on this Tuesday, the 9th of April. Eclipse the morning after. Wasn't that something? It was God's glory right in front of us and just fantastic. There may be one final smidge of some of the coverage of it. Nothing actually happened that I may get to this hour. But we got some important stuff in progress and some calls in that we want to put into that progress. At 866-660-5759, that's where you join us. That is also the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line. 866-660-5759. A lot of people springing to the text line with a line or two of thoughts about the Trump pronouncement on his abortion stance, which is to celebrate the end of Roe v. Wade, celebrate the status quo of the states being able to do what they wish to do, but stopping short of what a lot of pro-lifers want, and that is federal abortion restrictions, federal protection of the unborn. And in our chat with Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne a moment ago, it gave me a moment of pause, because she's right. And a lot of people have said, ooh, we don't want federalizing of this. All you conservatives that wanted the overturning of Roe v. Wade, just go with that and be happy with that. And as a staunch pro-lifer, I've said I'm never sufficiently happy with that, because for this ghoulishness to persist in pro-abortion states is never going to be acceptable to me, which has led me to say, all right, let's have a federal abortion protection on the way to a constitutional amendment. There is a hazard to that, to making that step on the way to the constitutional amendment. Might have to skip that step. Because if we decide that we're going to have a federal law protecting the unborn, as noble as that will be the moment at which we as a country have said, we're not going to have the states decide. We're going to have a federal protection of the unborn. Now, but here's the thing. Law giveth and the law taketh away. A federal protection of the unborn, much as I would support it, could be flipped by a Democrat president and a Democrat Congress to federal codification of Roe v. Wade. Today's federal law protecting the unborn is tomorrow's federal law saying we're going to have abortion almost without restrictions. Give it to Congress, you give it to Congress. Give it to the president, you give it to the president. Just another bill he can sign, becomes something that can change like the political winds of the moment. Huh. Gives one pause in looking at federal abortion protections, noble though that may be. And it maybe puts the ultimate holy grail, a constitutional amendment, as the only place to go from right here, right now. Now, that means I want to go there. How long will it take to get there? I don't know. I'll fight for it every step I have, but the people who are just torching, absolutely torching Trump, the pro-lifers, my fellow pro-lifers, who are just, you know, he sold out the pro-life movement, it was a betrayal. Guys, just stop, because maybe the most important point to be made is one of practicality, and that is that if he walks around touting a federal abortion ban right now, starting right now, he's going to lose. He's going to lose. How many babies do we save with another 4 years of Biden or worse? All righty, multiple thoughts, 866-660-5759. We are in Dallas. Robert, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mark. Hey. Mark, when the media talks about Trump versus Biden this November, why do they ignore the fact that Trump very likely is going to be in a New York prison starting in about 4 or 3 months?
It's not like it's not there. I mean, as nebulous as those results are, he faces, there are four big things: the federal election interference case, the Georgia election interference case, the classified documents case, the hush money case. Let me offer it to you in the following way. We have no idea what will happen in any of those. Since we don't know, you kind of got to take the field the way it's striped right now. It's Trump. It's Biden. If he's convicted of something, you then say, okay, well, how does that change everything? What does that change? How does that change the landscape? I think if I heard you correctly, you said that he'll be in a New York prison. No, he won't. There's none of these that will generally involve a prison term for anybody, much less a former president. As much as people would like that, there ain't going to be any prison time involved in any of this. His tormentors would be pretty happy with a conviction where they can say, look, he's a convicted felon. The question I have, and I'll hand it back to you with this, is one of the reasons that this doesn't weigh enormously heavily into the analysis is that most of the people who support him don't care. The people who hate him already. Most of the people who support him don't care. They view these as political witch hunts. So it may well be that it doesn't change the calculus very much.
Well, I believe he's going to be convicted in New York. I think you do too.
But I know nothing. I know nothing of the kind. Please don't tell me what I know. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
He's charged with a felony. By the way, I hope he's. I'm a Trump supporter. Okay.
Sure you are.
But he is charged with a. I am.
Okay.
But he is charged with a felony.
No. Yeah, so
I believe he'll be convicted before a very biased jury.
Okay. Well, I see. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm having a very hard time understanding why that liberal New York judge won't sentence him to prison. He's going to be under enormous political pressure to do so. What is your confidence that that's not going to happen based upon?
Because I think that number one, if the judge goes by norms, and I know often they don't, especially the politically motivated ones, this is not something that people tend to go to prison for. Number two, if he has, let's say that he is a political hack of the highest order, which is always a possibility. You got to look at the possibility of backfire. I think that the people who are tormenting him on purpose have seen this backfire. They thought surely the dangling threat of the trials themselves would cause people. There's no way he'll get the nomination with all of this. There's no way he'll dominate in the primaries with all this. And he has done exactly that. So they might have to take a look at this and say, look, we can say he's a convicted felon. If we really put him in an orange jumpsuit, he'll win 40 states.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. And pardon my moment of mild, affectionate mockery. So this is a little bit of cynicism that you have there. You really are a Trump supporter, and you're just thinking, you know, the deck is stacked so severely that, we just got to kind of deal with how that's going to play out.
No, I totally am. I don't understand. We just saw in the civil case, he got hit with a $450 million civil penalty.
Yep.
I don't understand the confidence that that's not going to, same thing's going to happen in the criminal case. The judge will have the ability to send him to prison, and he will be under enormous pressure to do so.
I think that there, if indeed corruption of this depth plays itself out, there will be some of that pressure may say, judge, if you, I'm dead serious. If you send him to jail, he wins 40 states. So be happy, take the W. He's a convicted felon, and just let it go. There are Democrat operatives who will say that if they have a brain in their head, which some might.
All right. Well, I appreciate.
I appreciate you. Those are absolute paths that we will be crossing in some form in the months to come. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. All right. So the path that we're on right now stems from roughly 24 hours ago.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. This 50-year battle over Roe v. Wade took it out of the federal hands and brought it into the hearts, minds, and vote of the people in each state. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently and very sadly a nation in decline.
So this, rare indeed, were moments on cable news last night where commentators tackled this. Jesse Waters did and had Governor Kristi Noem on to address it.
The Biden campaign immediately responded that Donald Trump supports extreme abortion bans without exceptions. Another hoax. We expect that. But politically, abortion's a thorny issue. Strong feelings on both sides. The former president posting this later. We cannot let our country suffer any further damage by losing elections on an issue that should always have been decided by the states and now will be. Trump's asking Republican politicians to follow their hearts, but show wisdom. The country can't be saved if Republicans lose power over the abortion issue. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem joins me now.
Governor, and this is funny. Let's as we go into this, I see things through. Of course, every time I see anybody on the TV box, it's like, does this person need to be vice president? Every time I've talked about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a lot of you have said, oh, Kristi Noem. And I'm a fan of Governor Noem, bigger fan of Governor Sanders. So, okay, let's see.
Your reaction to Donald Trump's statement on abortion.
Well, the president is exactly right. And his thoughts and his heart is with women in crisis that are facing these situations with precious babies. And that Roe v. Wade gave this right back to the states, and that's exactly where it should be. Every state will look different. We may hold personal beliefs as elected officials. I'm personally pro-life. But every state will look different, and it is about the will of the people. And I've never seen the federal government come in on a tough issue and offer a solution and fix it. In fact, the reality of a federal bill passing through the Senate and through the House just isn't there. So why are we talking about it? People have more of an input and more of a way to frame their state laws and what it looks like in their state with our state legislators who are their neighbors and their businessmen and women. Talk to them and have that conversation. And that's exactly what President Trump was saying.
And in fact, and this is something, on the day that the Dobbs decision came down and Roe v. Wade was thus overturned, there was just so much emotion and so much thought and so much analysis. Just, wow, it was crazy. And I remember on that day saying that this could be the beginning of an amazing story in which, with the decisions given to the individual states, that that Texas and Florida, you know, and Utah and et cetera, will be doing things to protect the unborn. You know, California and New York will decidedly not. They will maintain their ghoulish permissiveness on abortion. But in there, in the mid-ground of states, the purple states, you know, whatever, you could see an osmosis of belief that says, you know, this protecting the unborn thing, we like that. And I think that is an ethos that would spread.
I believe, Governor, that Republican governors that are pushing for 6-week abortion bans, to have that be on the ballot this election is politically risky for Republicans.
I think that we've shown that in many of these swing states, that those over 80% of the women in those states are more than a single issue voter. We should be talking to them about the issues that they care about as well, such as the border and gas prices, the economy, how they're taking care of their kids. These governors, you know, we all have opinions and we all have personal beliefs and values, but the will of our people in our state decides what the law is. You know, I don't get to be a dictator, and no other governor gets to as well. We can voice our opinions, but at the end of the day, the people should decide. So that's what I would encourage Republican governors to do, is to listen, to talk to their people, and to recognize that the Democrats are the extremists on this. That overwhelmingly, the vast majority in these swing states these Democrats and those that are these single issue voters, they want abortion up until that baby is born and maybe even after that baby is born. Yeah. Why don't we just talk about loving people? Why don't we just talk about taking care of people that are in crisis, giving them the resources and the information that they need and win the hearts and minds of people instead of constantly just picking fights and arguing and talking about some kind of a federal ban that just in reality is never going to happen.
That's some pretty pragmatic stuff from Kristi Noem. All righty, 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 922. So, hey, might have bailed a little early on that Q&A with Jesse Waters and Governor Kristi Noem, because, again, while I have been a fan, you'll recall that she struck me as a little slow to the party on protecting sports from transgender mania. There was a bill right there in front of her that would have hastily put South Dakota in the, well, not hastily, would have properly and promptly put South Dakota in the list of states essentially saying, hey, we're not going to have dudes in women's sports. And it seemed like a kind of a procedural, she framed it as kind of a procedural dispute, like there's a way to do this, a way not to do this. So Jesse Waters asked her about this on the heels of what we played, of course, yesterday. Oh, by the way, congratulations, UConn, for smoking Purdue in the men's game. The women's game was a bigger deal this particular March Madness, including the moment when the South Carolina coach, great coach, but needs some wisdom on dudes in women's sports.
I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
Damn, you got deep on me, eh? I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you considered yourself a woman, and you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play.
She doesn't believe that for a minute, but knew she would get absolutely roasted. This was a lack of courage on Dawn Staley's part, who is a great coach and a magnificent, but boy, you got to have the people in women's sports not willing to oversee their destruction. Anyway.
That's my opinion.
If you consider yourself a woman, you should be able to play.
Yeah, you know, it was hard watching that press conference because she was just so wrong. And she hasn't had this battle yet in women's sports. We've seen it in other sports, but in women's basketball, she hasn't had to face that. And she can have that opinion. And I bet as soon as men start stepping on that women's basketball court, she'd change her mind quickly because she would see opportunities gone for young women, scholarships gone for young women. I was super impressed with her after the game, you know, how she talked about uncommon favor from the Lord and how she talked about her faith. Her team was incredibly disciplined. I was impressed with their defense and how, you know, their offensive boards were amazing. So I think she's a good coach. She just obviously was put in a press conference before a big game and asked a question that she got wrong.
And that is correct. And by the way, I was also, you know, very taken, as I always am, with people who talk about the greatness of God and, you know, and the Most High Lord and all this stuff after they won. But if you're going to telegraph a lot of devotion to God, it's a good idea to pay attention to what he says about the human condition, about man and woman and gender. If you're going to talk about him, read his word and understand it. All right, 9:31, into the newsroom we go. Here is Nikki Whaley. It is 9:37 on this Tuesday, the 9th of April. It's funny how things align. No eclipse pun intended, but yesterday as we got to see the eclipse and see just God's wonder right before our eyes, Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. That's exactly what we saw. And then in the news, in the nitty-gritty of the news, there was President Trump talking about abortion policy and such. And we talk a lot about pro-life issues here on the show and how to go about that strategically. And then, so just follow me along here. And one of the things that's really important in looking at protecting life and being pro-life is embracing the whole concept of adoption, the entire landscape of adoption, foster care, the way that we care for kids. And people often come, maybe they come at you the way they do and say, well, you're sort of, you know, pro-kid when they're not born, but how about after they're born? And I always say, hello, open your eyes, because all around us is evidence of attention being paid in the evangelical community to adoption, foster care ministries, and such. So as it would happen, over in Jack Graham's world at Prestonwood in Plano, there's a conference. It's on Saturday, and it is called Chosen. Senior Associate Pastor Jonathan Teague is here, and we'll take a look at what that's going to be. Jonathan, welcome. How are you doing, sir?
Mark, it's great to be with you today and to talk about this. We are incredibly excited about the Chosen Conference. It's going to be this Saturday, April 13th at Prestonwood. Got an incredible day planned ahead. And we're just so very glad to be able to share it with your audience today.
Yeah, you got a few folks showing up: Governor Abbott, Sadie Robertson, and her mom, and just all and obviously Jack will have a word or two. What's the overall theme?
Well, and I'm so glad you're drawing attention to this, and you're exactly right. This is a part of a larger pro-life conviction and issue that churches like ours and countless others around the country feel so passionate about. I know you do as well, and so many in your audience. And we talk about being pro-life, Mark. Yes, of course, we are talking about saving and rescuing babies and serving moms. And we've been doing that through our Prestonwood Pregnancy Center and countless other centers like it for years and years. And this is just a continuation of that conviction in this ministry. And so as we've been working as a team and learning about the ever-increasing need in the foster care and adoption space, Mark, we're finding out 30,000 plus kids are in the foster care system in Texas alone, 400,000 that are a part of the system nationwide. And then, of course, the adoption crisis there ever before us. And so we just felt led, along with so many other churches and friends that are going to be joining us this Saturday, to try to lend our voice and to turn the volume up on this problem. And so we have an incredible lineup planned. Of course, you mentioned Sadie Robertson Huff and her mom, Corey. They're going to be headlining that evening. And Greg Mott, pastor of Houston's First Baptist Church, he's going to be speaking to pastors about how pastors can start these ministries. Shane and Casey Pruitt is going to be sharing their personal story of adoption and what God did in their life. And, of course, our pastor. And then, yes, our governor as well. And, you know, we're so thankful for what the state of Texas and others that are trying to get into this space, Mark, and put resources and infrastructure behind it. But at the end of the day, we just believe that faithful churches and Christians have a responsibility and an opportunity to get engaged in this space like never before. And so we're going to raise awareness. We're going to turn up the volume. We're going to bring to bear resources and friends and partners to try to help churches and families know how to launch these ministries and how individual families can get involved, maybe even prayerfully step into the opportunity to foster a precious boy or girl here in Texas or beyond and help solve this problem. We think if Christians really stepped up to the plate and obeyed what James 1:21-27 says, that true love, authentic love, is caring for the widow and the orphan in need, that we could eradicate this problem, Mark, that we could solve it on the local, state, and even national level. So we're throwing our hat in like never before, and we can't wait to see what happens.
It is the Chosen Conference. It is all day Saturday, and prestonwood.org/chosen for more info. Every time the foster care world shows up in the news, it tends to be just what a total disaster it is in terms of how, and it's got to be one of the hardest things in the world to oversee. And maybe, I'm sure Governor Abbott could tell us a couple of things about that. But as a church that has a lot to do with helping people get through crisis pregnancies without killing, that's what crisis pregnancy centers and these abortion alternatives are about. And with familiarity with the foster system, what could government do the whole foster world better as we try to increase the number of parents willing to foster, you know, so that they can get into an environment that makes more sense?
Well, of course, you know, we do appreciate all the work that state, local, and even national governmental resources put to bear. And, of course, Governor Abbott has worked hard to be a leader in this space. And we're thankful for all that the state of Texas does. And that's a big part of why he feels compelled to join us on Saturday, to sort of come alongside and say, hey, here's what we're doing. But at the end of the day, Mark, we are of the belief and really of the conviction that above and beyond what government can do and is responsible to help do, beyond that, Christians, like-minded Christians, need to be the owners and the leaders in this space. And we say that with humility, because we just feel like when folks who love Jesus get involved and mobilized here, that we can make a difference that, frankly, can far outpace what government ever was designed to do in the first place. In other words, it's not government's job. Government can resource and help and serve, of course, but churches and believers can mobilize, and they can make, I believe, we believe, the most impactful mark in this space. Because you're right, it is about not only rescuing babies and loving moms and rebuilding families. We just launched a family series at Prestonwood this weekend in our services to preach and talk about this. But we're going to put our feet in our hands where our mouth and our beliefs are. And we believe that when Christians and churches get mobilized, when pastors take the lead, when local churches take the lead, and believers get mobilized, that we can make a massive impact in this space.
Jonathan Teague is the senior associate pastor at Prestonwood. It is billed as an urgent summit addressing foster care and adoption needs. It is the Chosen Summit, and you can attend and get more info at prestonwood.org/chosen. Thank you, sir. Thanks so much. It's wonderful stuff you're doing. I know it's going to be a huge success, and thanks for telling us about it.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Appreciate you. Jonathan Teague at Prestonwood. Okay. 866-660-5759. It's 944. As we take a look, one of the things that the Trump pronouncement about the abortion issue put focus on is, what are the areas on which we're winning? What are the areas on which we're losing? I guess I mean Republican prospects in November. And what are the areas where we have, like, progress we can make? The Biden White House has to know that they are losing on so many things, losing on the economy, losing on crime, losing on gender, losing on education, losing on borders, you think, that they are now stooping to vote buying. This is what, and Newt was on Hannity last night and talking about the green giveaways, the debt forgiveness. There's no debt forgiveness. It's debt transfer. If you go to somebody whose adult signature is on a piece of paper and they said, I'm going to borrow this money and pay it back. Shocker, it's your responsibility to pay it back. And if government steps in and says, you don't have to pay it back anymore. It's not like that vanishes. It is simply transferred to you and me. A little Newt on vote buying.
They're in a position to simply try to buy votes. Most of the green initiative is buying votes. This whole student loan thing is buying votes. The effort they put into rewarding the teachers union is buying votes. When you come down to it, the Democratic Party is a combination of a very, very left-wing ideology and a machine that has to have your money to survive. So I think what they're hoping is that they can get away with breaking the law. You made a point here that really has to be, I think, focused on. The Supreme Court said that what Joe Biden is doing on student loans is unconstitutional. Now, he's the first president I know of who simply ignores the Supreme Court. He wants to give away more of your money. He doesn't care what the court says. In fact, he boasts he doesn't care what the court says. So you have a routine lawbreaking, and my fear, Sean, is when you get to September and October and none of this is working, you can't imagine what they'll do because they have no limits. They don't believe in the rule of law. They believe in the rule of power. They're proving every day that they think they can get away with things that are crazy and that they don't care what the country thinks. And they still have most of the left-wing propaganda media covering for them and protecting them.
Precisely right. Precisely right. So this is the tide we're up against. You know, the media are going to continue to be a protection racket, but I don't know. Sometimes, but they were in 80 when Reagan began his 8 years. They were in 2000 when Bush began his 8 years. Anyway, look, you know how much I love history. And didn't get a chance. Yeah, yesterday was so eclipse heavy and filled with so many other things as well. You know what happened 50 years ago last night? Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's 714 home runs. Al Downing of the Dodgers threw the pitch. The legendary Kurt Gowdy had the call.
Once again, a standing ovation for Henry.
Vin Scully, excuse me.
So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. So we'll see what Downing does. Al at the belt delivers, and he's low, ball one. And that just adds to the pressure. The crowd booing. Downing has to ignore the sound effects.
And of course, Vin Scully, the forever voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Professional and pitches games. One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
And people managed to get onto the field very pre-9/11 as Hank Aaron broke the 714 mark of Babe Ruth to hit his 715th. Mobbed by his Atlanta Braves teammates, just a remarkable, remarkable moment. Well, we had us a remarkable moment together yesterday, didn't we? And thoroughly enjoyed it. We had a Monday to sort of get everybody ready and play a lot of Eclipse and Sun-related tunes. Got everybody ready yesterday, and then we all got to get out and enjoy it and experience it together and talk about it some today. Just as it was a joy to be with my wonderful wife and to be with my beloved and see this amazing evidence of God in front of our eyes, it's been great to share it with you folks as well. Ha! Back to the earthly rigors of daily news events. We'll have an exit tune next. So I had a lot of playlists on shuffle yesterday driving around post-eclipse. And you could say I've got some Linda in my library. And before she became like one of the biggest stars in the world, she was putting out great albums like Don't Cry Now, 1973. And I heard Love Has No Pride. And I thought, you know, let's do this on the show tomorrow. So Linda takes us out. For our producer, Ron DeKay Moreland, on the Twitter at producer Ron DeKay, R-O-N-D-A, capital K. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills.
Love has no pride when I called your name.
Thank you, Nikki Whaley, for news excellence. And thank you all for listening. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Go get the podcast of the 7 o'clock hour. Mike joined us from Tokyo. It was a hoot. Let's get together tomorrow, see what's going on in the Wednesday headlines, and what we've got to sort through, shall we? I'm Mark Davis, 660 AM The Answer. Have a great rest of your day.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.